Blog Talk Radio.
Detail of the podcast on a Friday night, December 6th, 2013. I'm Dre. He's Jay. Ice baby, it is too cold out there. What is going on in this country? There is ice everywhere. It's in Dallas. It's down here in Memphis where I live. It's up in Wisconsin where Jason lives. It's all over the damn place. Jason, I don't know what's going to happen with all these games this weekend, but apparently most of them are going to be, like, iced over.
Well, the scheduling gods gave us and gave me an opportunity to play a little theory this week because we do have a lot of dome teams and a lot of warm weather teams going into some really, really cold, awful weather this week. So I'm playing the weatherman this week. There's a couple of exceptions, and I know we'll get to those. Generally where you have bad home teams where it doesn't really matter who they play in those conditions, but yeah, anything. I'd rather talk about the weather than the Texans and the Jaguars. So let's get on to something here, because that was a crap game, and Gary Kubiak got fired. I do have something to go over about that game though that I want to talk about in the after show. I have a little teaser there for after the show. Something that was said in the press conference that I caught wind of after the game. Want to talk about after the show here when we get into the VIP portion of our show.
Yo, VIP after show. Let's kick it. 15 games left in week 14 to get to our three highlight games. We will start off with the Colts and the Bengals, two division leaders in the AFC. The Colts, the AFC South leaders, you talked about those Houston Texans, favored by everybody, a prohibitive favorite to win the AFC South this year. And they start off 2-0, and then next thing you know, they can't win a game, like, ever again. So the Colts look like in just the greatest position to win that division. Cincinnati in position to take care of the AFC North. They're both 8-4. Cincinnati, however, 5-0 at home this year. Indy 4-2 on the road, despite, we talked about their point differential on the last show, not having much of a point differential at all, but just finding ways to pull out late wins. Amazing what Andrew Luck has done in that respect. But Indianapolis finds itself very much an underdog against Cincinnati. The public does not like the Colts in this spot. They are a 6.5-point dog at Cincy. Jason, who's your pick?
Well, I would like to start off by saying that Houston was the prohibitive favorite for everyone but me.
Except you.
It's on tape. That is on tape. You can go back to our second show, our AFC preview show. I believe I had this one. I had the Texans not even in the playoffs this year. However, I did not have them in line to be the number one seed for the draft. Wow. But no, I like Cincinnati here. This is another one of my. This is the battle for the third seed, the number three seed in the AFC. We have two identical records, I believe. Here, are we looking at 7-4s, 8-4s? What are we looking at here?
Yep,
here's the Batman. Yeah, we're looking at 8-4 teams. I don't think either one of them are going to catch Denver or New England. So really, whoever wins this game has a two-game lead on the other one. They'll have the tiebreaker head-to-head, and then they'll have the one-game lead. So whoever wins. So this is a big game, but this is the Colts. This is a dome team going into what looks like it's going to be an absolutely awful weather game in Cincinnati. They're forecasting cold. They're forecasting possible ice in this game, unless weather can change. But that's the last forecast I saw for Cincinnati tomorrow is possible ice, and that is not good. So it definitely ties right into your theme music that you had there. And when you get into the bad weather and everything starts to constrict and the running game matters more And the defense definitely matters more. I'm going with the team that I know can play some defense and get after the quarterback and disrupt the other team, and that's Cincinnati. No matter how many woes that they've had with Andy Dalton, the gadgetry that they did last week that I know completely mystified you in San Diego, that just made no sense at all whatsoever where that came from. I don't think they're going to be full of that this week. I think they're going to be tight with the football, and I think they're going to really clamp down on the defense and get after Andrew Luck and disrupt things. Indianapolis has, after winning those three big games, it was Denver, Seattle, and San Francisco. They've beaten all three of those, three of the best teams in football, and ever since then they haven't really looked too good. And they're going to win that division mostly by default. So for all those reasons, I'm taking the Bengals here.
Yeah, they haven't looked too good coinciding with Reggie Wayne's injury. They've definitely looked very average ever since then. And Andrew Luck hasn't thrown a touchdown pass in two of his last three games even. So even the magic of Andrew Luck has taken a bump down, you know, ever since Reggie Wayne went down to injury. But for the reasons you mentioned before about Cincinnati pulling some gadgetry and some trickeration last week against San Diego and screwing around and almost losing that game, they had to pull out a 7-point victory barely. Even though, you know, anytime you hold San Diego to 10 points, you should be happy, but they only scored 17. So for that reason, because Andy Dalton has been so inconsistent, it makes me very hesitant to take Cincinnati and give 6.5 points to a fellow division leader. But I'm going to do it with you anyway, because I, like you, can't imagine that dome team, the Colts, coming into Cincinnati in these conditions that look like they're just going to be terrible to play in and getting anything done. Indy struggling to do anything on the ground, whether it's Donald Brown or Trent Richardson all year, running into Cincinnati, did 8th-ranked rush defense in the league. I don't think that's going to turn out very well. I actually think this is a rare chance for Cincinnati to establish a run game and dominate on the ground between the law firm, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Giovanni Bernard. And through the air might be a bit of a wash, especially if it's the icy conditions you talk about. It might not be much happening through the air just because you get a ball thrown to you and you might just slip and lose your position. You might drop the ball. I don't know if there's going to be too much going on in the air between Andrew Luck and Andy Dalton. So, yeah, I'm right along with you. In those kind of conditions, in that situation, trust the better team and trust the more sturdy defensive team. That would be the Bengals. And also trust the home team. Like I said, 5-0 at home this year, something happening, something in the water. Don't know exactly what it is. But definitely got to trust the Bengals in this situation over the Colts. Moving on to our second highlight game. It'll be the NFC West Part 2, that great rivalry between the Seahawks and the 49ers. We all saw what Seattle did last week against New Orleans. Now they come down, go on the road to San Francisco. San Fran with a shot in the dark at winning that division still. They're 3 games out with 4 games to go. It would really be a collapse by Seattle combined with San Fran going on a hot streak for them to do it. But they're still alive. And Seattle, we know how they've looked on the road this year. They've been very inconsistent. They've looked great at some times, and sometimes they've looked very pedestrian. So very interesting matchup, Seattle going down on the road to San Francisco. I brought up last show about looking up what happened last year when Seattle went to San Francisco. And it was very funny to read that Seattle had pulled out a big win at home over Tom Brady and the Patriots and followed that up and all the press clippings that went with that by going to San Francisco and putting up 6 points. I'm going to call for something similar to happen this week. Seattle, a 2.5-point underdog, the 11-1 Seattle Seahawks, the best record in the game. They're a 2.5-point dog at San Francisco. And I understand why, and I'm going to give the points, and I'm going to take the 8-4 49ers. And I think it's going to be a rout. I think San Fran is waiting for this game. This is one of those situations where you know two teams are at the top of their division and they basically plan for each other and do all of their off-season moves with each other in mind. And San Francisco thoroughly embarrassed going up to Seattle in week two, getting ready to show everybody that they're going to be on top of the NFC. They beat up the Packers in week one. They go to Seattle and just get dong whipped. And I think they've been smarting from that all season long, and I think they have been ready for this. And it's a perfect timing for Michael Crabtree to have made his return last week to get a game under his belt, to get knock some of the rust off, and to give Colin Kaepernick much more weapons in the open field than he has had all year. And I think even if he plays the decoy role to just open things up for Vernon Davis and Anquan Boldin, that's still better than what Kaepernick had been dealing with all season long. I just have a feeling that Seattle, coming off of that Monday night game, bit of a short week, had their heads in the clouds, maybe feeling themselves a little bit. I think they're going to go down to San Francisco and get destroyed. And I think, you know, Pete Carroll and his team, it's so easy for them to get full of themselves. It's so easy for them to get a little too much confidence. You see it in them. You know, they got the swagger about them. They really do think they're the best, and they think no one can touch them. They act like it. They play like it. And I think it leaves them open to going on the road sometimes and getting smacked in the mouth because they don't think anyone can do it to them. But when it happens bad. And I think the 49ers, are going to smack them in the mouth pretty bad.
Well, there's not a game I think that you and I can see any more differently than we see this one. I know a lot of the press that I've seen about this game is talking about how San Francisco is doing exactly what you said. They're laying in the weeds. You know, they're ready to punch the big bag bully, and that's Seattle. And Seattle, after just beating New Orleans, is feeling their oats a little bit, and they're going to be coming in there thinking they're the hot shit and just not going to be ready for what San Francisco is going to do to them. I actually see it the other way. I think this is the moment that Seattle can just get the Niners out of the equation, just knock them completely out of the division race, could really hurt them in the wild card race possibly too. We know that Seattle loves to kind of kick that team when they're down. And if you do want to prove that you're elite, especially as a 11-1 dog, which this couldn't even be a pick 'em. So somebody doesn't believe in Seattle, clearly. The betting line doesn't believe in Seattle because that line only ticked a half a point in Seattle's direction for an 11-1 team that a week ago, and we know how we all love to overreact, that they looked dominant against a good Saints team. They made the Saints just look like complete chumps on Monday night. Or Sunday night. What night was that game? I'm confused.
That was a Monday night game.
That was Monday night. Yeah, I'm all confused. Maybe I'm still, you know, feeling the tipsiness from last week here. Or maybe it's these 10 o'clock shows every week. You never know. It could be any combination of things. But I think Seattle's really ready to step up. This is, I think, their moment, and I think they're ready for it. They really they're over a lot of these road woes. And they're 11-1, so they've won every game at home. They lost one game on the road, and that was during that stretch when they lost to Indy, when Indy was seeming to beat everybody, because Indy even beat San Francisco, and they beat, you know, we just talked about that. Indy beat all these really good teams. Everybody was ready to just crown Indy as, wow, they're the best team in football. Look at all these teams that they're beating. Seattle has really clamped down and played better on the road. Now, Seattle has played from behind a lot and looked really bad in stretches, but they've just seemed to find that magic. And if they win, we talked about this briefly, if it made it into the after show on the recap show, or if we did this in the after show. But Seattle wins this game and clamps down that number one seed. which I think they are very likely going to be and should do, because I've got them to do it this week. If they can clamp that all down and get it done, nobody's going through there and winning against that team in Seattle. Seattle's probably got to be thinking, we can win this, we can punch our ticket to the Super Bowl. And I think getting rid of the Niners is going to go a long way towards doing that. So I think I'm doing this more as a gut pick. You know, I don't have any stats. I'm not going to break down any X's and O's. I just think that in the mindset of the Seahawks, this is the week for them to finally just stick a fork in the Niners and guarantee that if they play them again, it's going to be in their building. And we know how that'll go.
Yeah. Yeah, when you have a gut pick, that's when I'm the most scared, because that's the ones that usually go on top for you. Our third highlight game will go prime time for this. On Sunday night, it'll be the red-hot Carolina Panthers, the hottest team in football. They're 9-3. They won, I believe, 8 in a row. Going to New Orleans, who's also 9-3, 6-0 at home, coming off of getting whipped at Seattle last week, but they go back in their element down in the Superdome. They won't have to worry about ice, baby. Should be a great game. Panthers and Saints. Panthers are the typical three-point dog at New Orleans. Jason, who you got?
I'm going with the Panthers here. I'm going to pull an Andre here, jump right on, take the reins, jump right on that Carolina bandwagon, and damn it, I'm going to drive that thing right off the cliff. I'm going to end this shit right now. Either Carolina is going to carry me to the victory, or I'm going to just take them and just wreck them, because I have picked against them in every big spot. And even some little spots the last few weeks, including that game that they had to come back and win late against Miami. I know that Miami, I believe, covered that game. So I did get a win. But Carolina showed me a lot by coming from behind and winning a game on the road after two huge wins. New Orleans really, really looked – I mean, they looked bad last week. And it wasn't so much that they looked bad – as they looked inept. And if there's another defensive team that can do the things that Seattle can do, well, their closest cousin in defense in the league has got to be Carolina. So New Orleans can't be too excited about having to face the Seahawks defense and the Panthers defense in back-to-back weeks. And again, this is another statement game. Carolina wants to be mentioned in the conversation as the best teams. This is for first place in that division. Can you believe it? And I really on the emotion. And again, neither one of us are big fans of the Saints defense. I mean, I will admit that it's better than it was last year, because it couldn't possibly be worse. But I think Carolina plays enough defense and just enough offense that they can – I think it'll be a good, close game. Not as high scoring as people might think, because Carolina's going to need to hold New Orleans down. But I do like the Panthers here to come up with the win and take the lead in that division.
Yeah, very few teams win a shootout in New Orleans. But it's funny, you talked about – playing at Seattle and then coming back and playing the Panthers and playing two great defenses in a row, that made me look at the numbers, and I actually saw something to bolster my case, and I'm taking New Orleans and giving the 3. In playing Seattle, they went against the number one pass defense in the league, but Seattle is only giving up 5.8 yards per pass attempt, which is also first in the league. In Carolina, they're playing the 6th best pass defense in the league, but that's because Carolina gets to hold people down and make people try to throw and come back, and they're not successful. Carolina, however, is giving up 6.9 yards per pass attempt. So when you can get a chance to throw against Carolina, you can have some success. It's not a lot. It's not a great big number, but it's a full yard more than what Seattle gives up per pass attempt. I think New Orleans is going to come back and send a statement that we're not what you saw on Monday night in Seattle. I think Drew Brees can't wait to get back on the field and get the stink of that game off of him. And I think the New Orleans Saints are going to beat down the Carolina Panthers. Now, I don't have the greatest confidence in that because of what Carolina has done the last 8 weeks. They've really impressed me just like they've impressed you, Jason. But in this particular spot, it's yet another test for Carolina. They passed all the tests before. But this particular test at New Orleans against an angry Drew Brees and Sean Payton coming off of embarrassing primetime nationwide beating, that's a spot I just don't think the Panthers can pass that test. If they pass that test, then I don't know. Maybe we should be looking at the Panthers as a Super Bowl contender, because what else can they do if they come out and get it done in this spot? So I'll be watching. It's going to be a great one, but I got the Saints to bounce back and get a big victory over the Panthers.
Well, that's what we thought of the games in greater detail. Now it's time for the rest of the games in much less detail.
And we will start with, I can get my notes right. Let's start with the Chiefs and the Redskins. Washington at home, a 3-point underdog against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm going to go ahead and take the Redskins to win. I am not a believer in the Chiefs. They did not impress me the last few weeks. I think they're ready to fall off a cliff. I'm not going to declare that they're going to lose every game the rest of the year, but I am going to declare that any decent team is going to take out that overrated defense. And Washington at 3-9 does not have the record of a decent team, but I think RG3 is a decent quarterback, and he's getting healthier and getting better. And I think Washington is actually going to put up a good number of points and beat the Chiefs. Jason will go with the Chiefs. Kansas City, he says, is back to bum slaying, taking out their frustration after three tough weeks on a bum team like the Redskins.
We both like the Baltimore Ravens this week, a seven-point home favorite against the Minnesota Vikings. Baltimore is 5-1 at home this year, and Andre expects the Minnesota Vikings to get lit up on the pass defense side by Joe Flacco. And you know what I say? I think the Ravens are going to storm the castle.
It'll be the Matt Castle, unfortunately. Miami and Pittsburgh. Miami a 3-point dog at Pittsburgh. Ice, ice, baby. We like the Steelers. In that terrible weather, you got the Miami team coming from sunny Florida up to Pittsburgh. We don't think that's going to work out well for the Dolphins. Jason says, Miami not mentally tough. They're headed into that rough weather. Big Ben's made for this rough weather. Ben Roethlisberger, he loves playing in this shit. He likes the Steelers to get the win. I concur. I even like that Pittsburgh is protecting Big Ben. He's only been sacked one time in the last 3 weeks. Usually Pittsburgh just gives up the booty and lets him get sacked. If they're going to protect Big Ben, he's really going to perform.
The Buffalo Bills, 2.5-point road dog this week at the second hottest team in Florida, behind, of course, Jacksonville. This would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Andre's going with the Bills, facing the 30th-ranked pass defense in Tampa Bay. And Buffalo likes to get after the quarterback, and he expects Mike Glennon to get knocked to the turf quite a few times and escape with the win. I'm sticking with the second hottest team in Florida, the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Cleveland Browns and the New England Patriots, ice, ice, baby in Foxborough, maybe. Cleveland's an 11-point dog at New England, and Jason will go with the Brown Fever for a very simple reason. No Brandon Wheaton, that means Cleveland can cover. Jason Campbell will be back in the saddle for the Browns. I'm going to go with the Patriots anyway, because there's only one way for Cleveland to get a fast start, and that's with Josh Gordon going through the air, and I don't know if Aqib Talib's going to let that happen. We know New England's had problems with fast starts. I don't think they're going to have that problem with the Cleveland Browns.
The Detroit Lions are 2.5-point road dogs at Ice Ice Baby in Philadelphia this week, and we both like the Philadelphia Eagles to come away with a win. My reasons, of course, dome team going into the crap weather. Andre's reason, dumbest coach loses, and that's Jim Schwartz.
Another 3-point line, Oakland Raiders plus 3 at the New York Jets. I'm sorry, I can't go with Oakland going on a 12 o'clock game on the East Coast. Ice, ice, baby. No way, can't do it. Oakland 0-12, their last 12 trips out east. I'm going to go with Geno Smith and the Jets. Jason is going to go with the Oakland Raiders. Matt McGloin might actually be the better quarterback on the field. The Jets have just been so exposed lately that he cannot go with gangrene.
Well, I'm going to be the man on the scene this week for In Much Less Detail. I'm doing a live I'm using my press pass this week for the Atlanta-Green Bay game. Atlanta is a 3.5-point road dog at Ice Ice Baby, the Green Bay Packers. Andre's going with the Ice and the Packers this week because he still thinks, even though the Falcons pulled that win out last week against the Bills, that they are still full of quit and that Matt Ryan has been a statue in the backfield and that Clay Matthews and the Packers D is going to get after Matt Ryan. I actually like the Atlanta Falcons this week, just getting moderately healthy, getting slight contributions from Steven Jackson and Roddy White. They've actually looked like a completely different team. Their defense still stinks. But Packers haven't won a game since Aaron Rodgers got hurt, and their defense just looks so awful right now. I did not realize how Aaron Rodgers played defense for the Packers, but I like Atlanta to go in there, and this is a team with some history going to Green Bay and winning big.
Might be some icy conditions in Denver. Tennessee Titans go into Colorado as a 12-point dog at the Denver Broncos, and we know what icy conditions mean for Peyton Manning's arm, and that's why I'm taking Tennessee to cover that number, but not necessarily to win. I do not like Peyton Manning in that weather, and I think Tennessee is a good team as far as having some heart and having some fight. I think they'll have enough fight to cover that big number. Jason's going to take Peyton Manning in Denver to cover that number. He's just going to go back to taking Denver to squish people like he did early in the year, which seemed to work out for him, and maybe they'll go back to doing it again.
Homecoming week, Eli Manning and the New York Giants go back to San Diego, the place where Eli was drafted to play originally and then promptly traded for Philip Rivers. Andre hates the San Diego defense, even though these are his new New England Patriots. That hasn't really come to fruition for him. So he's going to ride the hate train on San Diego this week, and he's going to go with New York. I'm sticking with San Diego. Andre thinks that the Giants can put up 35 on the Bolts. Well, why can't the Bolts put up 41? Just do like they did to Kansas City a few weeks ago, and let's have a shootout. I like the Chargers big. A big number, but not big win.
St. Louis Rams are plus 6 at the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona coming off of that loss in Philadelphia. I don't know why. I just got disappointed off of that game. I thought they should have went in and handled themselves a lot better than they did. I'm going to take the Rams to win. I like St. Louis to get pressure on interception. Santos got a bum flipper. Hey, he's got a bum flipper. Carson Palmer, he's got a bad elbow. How bad has he been with a good elbow, and now he's got a bad elbow? I don't like that at all. I got a bad feeling he's going to throw some picks in this game and give out some early Christmas presents for the Rams. Jason's going to go with the Arizona Cardinals. He just likes Arizona to bounce back against a bad team like the Rams. He just likes them to go 6-1 at home.
Wow, 6-1 at home for the Cardinals. That's hard. That's almost hard to hear when you actually hear it because we don't think of the Cardinals as a good team. But they're pretty good. Dallas is a plus 1 this week, so 1-point road dog at Ice Ice Baby in Chicago, our hometown. Andre and I both have the Bears this week. Andre has the losing combination here for the Cowboys. Tony Romo in December on the road. In bad weather. I couldn't say that any better myself, so I won't even try to top that. And that's going to end the pick segment of our show here.
We thank you for listening live. We will be moving on to our VIP after show. Our picks are already up on the blog in much less detail, blogspot.com. Want to hear the rest of this show? You can subscribe on iTunes. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, and also our archive page. The show page right here, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. Got all the archives, all our old shows listed there. We will see you on the other side of this music. This broadcast is copyrighted. All right, we are now into the after show portion.
Yeah, so I'm watching the game last night. I have a little thing here to talk about. I hate to give publicity, of course, to, you know, like ESPN, but because they don't need any more. But I'm watching some of the after portion, the interview portion, caught a little bit of it today where they were talking to the players after last night's game between Jacksonville and Houston. And they're, you know, Maurice Jones-Drew had a big game. The Jaguars look competent against what's got to be right now the worst team in football. Sorry to think that that's Houston, but yep, they got the worst record in the league now. And Maurice Jones-Drew is basically saying, if I'm remembering this all correctly, and I'm pretty sure I am, that he was that the Jaguars were feeling disrespected as men because the Mike and Mike in the Morning show was making fun of what an awful game this was that they played last night and that nobody should watch it and just making fun of it. And I'm thinking, these guys need to get their motivation. This is your mark of a bad team right here when you need to get motivation from Mike and Mike in the Morning. That's it. That's not an indictment. If that's not an indictment of the horrible coaching going on in either one of those cities, you got it. Maurice Jones-Drew was pissed off because of something he heard on Mike and Mike in the Morning.
I mean, you mean Tom Brady and Bill Belichick don't get their motivation from morning talk shows? You mean Peyton Manning doesn't sit around listening to morning talk in Denver and getting pumped up and motivated for his game from that?
I don't think you'll ever hear Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Calvin Johnson. Most NFL teams that are any good, I don't think you're going to hear them individually call out a radio show or a radio host as the reason why they were up for that game. You'd think the millions of dollars that they make every week and that it's their job, you know, you want to actually have pride in actually going out and doing your job and doing it well because that's how you provide for yourself and your family, and then you have your fans, even though in Jacksonville they're usually getting booed. And then on TV, they probably don't even get to watch the game because it's most likely blacked out. But other than that, you'd think you'd have motivation as a professional to go out and actually do your job. But no, not the Jacksonville Jaguars and Maurice Jones-Drew. They needed to get their motivation to show up for that game and prove Mike and Mike in the Morning wrong. Wow.
That sends me back mentally to a baseball thing, and I might get you on a rant that takes up the rest of the time when I bring this up, but that reminds me of your Chicago Cubs back in the Dusty Baker era having situations and problems with the broadcast booth when they started losing games toward the end of one of their seasons. They're expected to be, you know, a perennial playoff team after the whole Kerry Wood, Mark Pryor stuff. They, you know, everyone thought they were just going to bounce back from that and come back and be a perennial contender. And the very next year, they found themselves losing, you know, to the likes of Cincinnati and Houston and whatnot. And it wasn't going well. And they decided, instead of just bucking up and turning things around and taking some personal pride, they decided to take their anger out on Steve Stone because he was being critical of them up in the broadcast booth. And like you just said, no good team looks to broadcasters or talk show people for motivation or pays them the least bit of attention. Only bad teams are paying attention to shit like that.
That is correct. Yeah, that year was that was the year that, well, Dusty Baker, he's a pretty thin-skinned guy to begin with. He doesn't really.
Hey, man, I don't know what you're talking about, bro. Come on, man.
And Steve Stone, and I don't know if you would agree with this, but you might agree with this, is probably one of the best commentators in all sports. I mean, he tells you what's going to happen before it happens, and then it happens. And tells you what should happen.
I could not agree with you more.
And it kills me. You know it kills me that he's broadcasting for the White Sox, because he really took that job as nothing more than a big fuck you to the Cubs.
Yes.
which is fine. He didn't do it to me. they treated him so unfairly, him and Chip Carey. And I wasn't the biggest Chip Carey fan, but that, you know, they were that booth after Harry Carey died, which was fine. And they, and Dusty Baker went on this crusade again. Well, and you know, and we understand where this criticism from Stoney was coming from. It was coming from the horrible handling of the, of those Cubs pitchers and all these injuries that were creeping up. And just, like, this is some shock that Dusty Baker doesn't know how to handle pitchers, and he, you know, and all these guys end up blowing their arms out and getting Tommy John surgery. He doesn't handle bullpens particularly well, you know. All these things that were being said, and they were all true, and it definitely got under Dusty Baker's skin, and it turned into this feud, the most idiotic thing, a feud between a professional ball club, and mostly coming from the manager, and your broadcasters. As if you're losing, like the broadcasters can have any impact on what's going on in the game while it's happening. They can't hear these guys. They don't know. And so that was where it was taken to a negative point, where you have Maurice Jones-Drew, who was using the things they were saying to go out there, and I will show you, Mike and Mike, you bastards, you guys don't like us. Well, my God, when did the Jaguars, I mean, the people have been making fun of the Jaguars all year. They should listen to our show. They'd be undefeated.
Oh, my God.
The way we've gone back and ripped on the Jaguars, I mean, you need some fuel. Listen to our show, because we don't pull any punches. If you're shit, we'll tell it to you. Yeah, we'd have a lot of teams on winning streaks right now. Geno Smith's going to throw 8 touchdowns this week if you listen to our show. But yeah,
you know who else has
definitely
been ripping on the Jaguars this year?
Who's
everybody?
Yeah. So let's Mike and Mike. So I don't know if Maurice Jones-Drew wanted to get onto the Mike and Mike show, and he figured if he name-dropped, then maybe they'll invite him on, because it's about the only way he's going to get on any radio show, because he's on the Jaguars. I'm not seeing too many Jaguars players on doing the circuit, you know, as far as getting on the press. But yeah,
I don't know if I could name 4 other Jaguars.
I could, but I won't, because I don't want to. I just won't. I refuse. But, yeah, no, that's a very good correlation there, where you can take it to the total opposite and the total other way of basically using an excuse of the broadcasters or the media as to why you're going in the tank or as to why your team is horrible. And, oh, those terrible guys. Yeah, and it was terrible that they ran Steve Stone out of Chicago. Well, he's back in Chicago now. But the way they ran him out, and you know, and for people who don't get a lot of exposure to, you know, Cubs or White Sox baseball and don't have a lot of the, you know, experience, I know he's done a few national games, but he is the best at what he does, because you will actually learn about baseball. It's not like watching Tim McCarver. He's swinging the ball 3 times and missed. You're out. My best Tim McCarver, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, you're definitely not getting Joe Buck and Tim McCarver, or Joe Buck and anybody, you know.
Yeah.
Anybody who wants to know what bad broadcasting looks like, I want you to go back and I think it was the David Tyree catch in the Super Bowl. If you actually just read. You know, that was no Gus Johnson call on that catch. But, yeah, that was the most – I mean, I was at your place watching that game, jumping off your couch watching that play happen, that we're just, like, completely, like, stunned. We made it exciting, and Joe Buck is like, and he makes the catch. Okay.
And he holds on to the ball.
That wasn't one of the most stunning plays of all time.
Yeah, I'm screaming going. At you. I know I would.
Dusty Baker team. Did he catch that? And I'm looking at your TV, jumping off the couch, like, he caught it, he fucking caught it, he caught that. You know, and that was for us, between us. That was to determine our championship for the year. And I remember, was that the game, I believe, when I said to you just directly, like, I knew I was going to lose the pick, but I'm like, you know what, if I'm going to lose the pick, damn it, the Patriots better lose this game.
I actually think you said that before the game started, because the Patriots are such prohibitive favorites, It was that undefeated team. It was that Randy Moss team that was setting all the records. And they had to be about a 12 or a 14-point favorite over the Giants. And I was able to take those points. The position I was in, I was able to pick first, and I took the Giants to cover that number. And you said, yeah, you said, if the Patriots can't cover that number, I hope they just go ahead and lose the fucking game because I don't like them anyway. That's exactly what happened.
Well, you know, and that's the position that we put ourselves in. More often than not, it really comes down to one of us who has the lead picking the Super Bowl correctly, and that's our championship. And the last few years, for quite a long stretch now, the person who needed to win the Super Bowl pick won the Super Bowl pick. Which was kind of the opposite of the way it was like a decade ago when you would just find a way to have the lead and blow the Super Bowl pick. famously a few times, even all the way back to our first one, which I blew, which was wide right, which actually caused our season to finish in a tie.
Scott Norwood, baby, I love you wherever you are.
20-19, and we were just picking. We were not picking the spread. That was our first year.
Right,
we were
that was straight,
straight
up.
That was straight up, and I just knew I had. I think I had the Bills every year. They were in the Super Bowl. Oh God.
You and Boomer Berman, apparently.
We were young. I mean, we do forget sometimes that the first year we picked games, we were 13. We're talking about this like it's we were adults. We were 13 years old.
Does that mean that we're coming up on our 25-year anniversary of picking games?
Yeah, I believe next year will be the 25th. Oh boy, we'll have to have all kinds of retrospectives, and it'll be fun next year because especially as we go into the off season, we can get prepared for our 25th year of doing this. Even though it'll only be our fifth year on the blog and our second year podcasting it, but yeah, it'll be our 25th year of picking football games. That's insane.
How old are we? Yeah.
Well, we're both coming up on 38, if I do the math correctly. 13 plus 20. Yep. Yeah, 38 is coming right around the corner for both of us, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's even more amazing how we wind up so close, and the Super Bowl winds up being the game that we have to pick in order to decide the championship, concerning how many games we differ from each other. We do not go in lockstep on most football thoughts. We are different guys with different opinions. We differ on 10 games this week alone. On a typical week, it's, you know, 6 or 7, it seems, this year. And yet it all winds up so close in the end just because we swap games back and forth and one of us believes in, you know, one team way too much and winds up picking them all the time and not learning our lesson. The other one believes in another team too much and winds up picking them all the time. It's just incredible how it winds up like that at the end of every year. It seems to be almost a guarantee, folks, that no matter what the season-ending numbers are going to be, we're going to be, like, right there within, like, you know, 3 or 4 games of each other, and the playoffs are going to just basically be, you know, for all the marbles.
Well, which is how it should be, right? I mean, and it's funny because doing this as long as we've done this, we know each other's tendencies on these picks, but we don't pick the games with the other person in mind, which is even more funny. Even if one of us is way behind or has to make up ground, I'm not making my pick. You know, you have your pick made, and then I have my pick made without knowing what your pick is. So just so people know that. We run all the picks down, and that's it. We don't, you know, we generally don't change them. Every once in a while, one of us flops on a pick or convinces the other one to change a pick, and most of the time that doesn't work. But for we're not collaborating on our picks at all. So we're not, oh, you know what, I need this one. And in the playoffs, we'll do that because to keep it competitive, we'll do that. I'm not just going to, one of us going to tank the season. But looking at the clock, make it official.
I already copyrighted the broadcast. I do want to mention that we'll be welcoming Michael and Cass from Football Fan Rush Radio back to the show in a couple of weeks. We'll have some more details on that. And we also might be doing a joint project together, something for the Christmas holiday. We'll have more info on that as well. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. And you can email the show in much less detail at gmail.com. I'm Dre. He's Jay. This is In Much Less Detail.